The question is, will boiling water, boiling anything actually, will affect B12? And so the answer is yes. If you boiled water, that would have less B12 in it. Boiling for a long period of time will diminish the content of B12 in a food. Yes.
And how safe, how dependent is boiled water from the tap? Taking water from the tap.
All right. Okay. All right. Okay, the question is about boiling water and whether it helps to make it more potable, and the answer is no. In our day, the problem is not bacterial contamination with water that comes out of the tap. Our problem is with certain toxic substances, either that have been added, or the interreaction of one chemical with another, especially the interaction of certain protein materials in water, such as that might come from roots or from some kind of bacterial growth, perhaps, and the chemicals that are added to the water. This can make toxic chemicals that can cause a real problem for humans. Boiling may even concentrate these chemicals and make it so that it's even worse. Okay, there are three kinds of water that you can usually buy on the market. One is mineral water, another is spring water, and another is distilled water. Of those three, I would prefer probably the distilled water, since it is pure water. But the other two are all right, too, if they're pure. I understand there are some unscrupulous merchants who just fill up their bottles from the tap and sell that as a very expensive water, so you have to watch out for that. Question?
Well, the doctors now are recommending that women over 40 should take a calcium supplement.
Yes. All right, let's study a bit about osteoporosis. That's the thinning of the bones that women have past the age of 50. Well, let me just tell you a few things about osteoporosis that you may not know, because it has been obscured a great deal by the dairy industry. And physicians, not being themselves researchers, they take in good faith this that is promoted by the dairy industry without really understanding that the dairy industry is not giving the absolute truth on the matter of osteoporosis. Of course, the National Dairy Council wants to promote its products because it is in commerce. And those of us who are in a profession, we expect that everybody is going to be behaving professionally, even those who are in commerce. But sometimes that is not the case. And I feel that within 10 years, that all authorities will believe that milk is one of the causes of osteoporosis rather than one of its cures. And instead of giving large quantities of calcium, the objective will not be to give more calcium, but it will be to protect that calcium that we have. Now, let me tell you how that works. If you happen to have our book, Natural Remedies, you'll find a section on osteoporosis on page 87, those of you who have it. If you would like to have a complete discussion of osteoporosis, you will find that. It's not the last word in osteoporosis, but it is rather complete, and tells you how to prevent osteoporosis and how to treat it if you have it. Exercise and osteoporosis are known to be involved. If one does not exercise, one is far more likely to get osteoporosis. If one does not take adequate and proper quantities of protein, osteoporosis is likely to be involved. What would be your attitude toward protein if you wanted to prevent osteoporosis? You would not take much protein. Now let me repeat that. If you wish to avoid osteoporosis, do not take large quantities of protein, because protein and calcium have a seesaw relationship with each other. As protein goes up, calcium goes out in the urine, and it is impossible to maintain a positive calcium balance in the body if one takes in a high quantity of protein. That's one of the facts of life. And vegetarians, therefore, having a smaller intake of protein, have less osteoporosis. Now, another thing. What about sugar and osteoporosis? Sugar, apparently, and honey, apparently contribute to osteoporosis. And therefore, women past the age of 50 need to be very restrained in their use of sugar or honey. Now, what about milk and osteoporosis? Well, milk has several problems with it. One is that milk is high in sodium. Sodium and calcium have a seesaw relationship with each other. Milk is high in phosphorus. Phosphorus and calcium have a seesaw relationship with each other. And milk is high in protein. So here are three things known to make calcium go down, which are present in high quantities in milk. And I do not recommend milk for women who are trying to prevent osteoporosis or who have osteoporosis. There's much more on osteoporosis in this little book called Natural Remedies. But I would like to just tell you some of the reasons why people need to, some of the causes of osteoporosis. One cause is alcohol. The more alcohol a person takes, the greater the likelihood of osteoporosis. The more steroids a person takes, that would be like cortisone and prednisone and the like, even those things that are rubbed on the skin for skin rashes, those can be taken into the blood and can diminish the quality of the bone and cause the bones to lose calcium. An increased uric acid in the blood. Now, uric acid is elevated in individuals who eat a lot of heavy protein foods, because purines, which cause the uric acid to go up, purines are present along with high protein in foods, generally speaking, and consequently people who are on a high protein diet tend to get a high uric acid. That will cause osteoporosis or thinning of the bones. Birth control pills will cause a thinning of the bones. So will the taking of estrogens over a long period of time. Estrogens will immediately cause a little increased density of bones, but then after a little while, estrogen causes loss of calcium from bones. Smoking is a very great culprit in osteoporosis. So is coffee. If a woman drinks one cup of coffee per day past the age of 50, she will lose 1.4% of her bone calcium per year. That means 14% per decade. That's quite a lot of calcium loss. And I feel that we should be very careful about taking a lot of coffee. We should tell people that this is one of the causes of osteoporosis. Now, would you notice something about the incidence of osteoporosis? America has the highest incidence of osteoporosis of any country in the world. America also has more women smoking than any other country of the world. America also has more women drinking a lot of milk than any other country of the world. It is also that heaviest coffee drinking country, except for Colombia and maybe Brazil. We drink an enormous quantity of coffee, and it causes a lot of loss of bone density. The taking of thyroid supplements is also a cause of osteoporosis. And many women are on a thyroid supplement for nothing more than just cosmetic reasons. The doctor put them on thyroid supplement a long time ago and they're still on it. A high intake of vitamins A and D will cause osteoporosis. Add acids containing aluminum will cause osteoporosis. And certain of the antibiotics, notably tetracycline, will also cause osteoporosis. Now, I feel that if a person is in a position to have access to people, to tell them to drink a lot of milk, they're in access to people by TV and radio and newspaper to tell them, to tell women not to drink coffee, not to take steroids, not to take thyroid supplements, not to smoke, not to use alcohol, not to use meat, milk, eggs, and cheese in heavy quantities. Any other question about osteoporosis? Have I convinced you that the drinking of milk is not the answer to osteoporosis? There are two things that are the answer to osteoporosis. One is exercise. The other is the vegetarian diet. Question here.
Calcium.
Yes.
If they don't exercise, the body can't absorb that calcium.
That's right. In order for us to absorb and utilize calcium, we have to be exercising. And we also have to be on a diet not high in protein. If we're on a high protein diet, then calcium simply goes out in the urine. Yes, doctor. Yes, sugar and honey apparently causes a loss of calcium from the bones, and the calcium is simply lost in the urine. Any other question on this? Yes.
Is it possible that osteoporosis can be a genetic factor?
Question is, can it be a genetic factor? Yes, a tendency toward it does occur, and especially because extreme thinness in women tends to be a genetic factor. And plump ladies very rarely have osteoporosis. And the more plump the person is, the less likely, simply because of the fact that there's a lot of exercise and carrying around the extra weight, and that makes the person take up more calcium in the bones. I would get a second opinion probably about the osteoporosis. It might be that the radiologist overread the matter and on the X-rays. Especially if the radiologist knew that you were a vegetarian, he might have been influenced by that. We often have people to carry diagnoses that they don't really carry at all just because they are vegetarians, and everybody assumes that because they don't eat a lot of meat or drink a lot of milk that they're going to have they're going to have certain diseases, osteoporosis being one of them. I could tell you some very funny stories about anemia with a suspected B12 deficiency, or osteoporosis with a suspected calcium deficiency in people who are vegetarians who actually had nothing at all wrong with them. All right, I'd like to talk with you now about hypertension. In our little book, Health Emphasis Seminar, we have a section there on hypertension. If anyone has hypertension, I do hope you will look at page 11 of this little booklet, Health Emphasis Seminar Syllabus, and learn how not to have high blood pressure. We also have the very same subject discussed at greater length in our book called More Natural Remedies. This little book carries, under the subject of hypertension, carries a good discussion of the subject of high blood pressure. Now, here is what to do if you have high blood pressure. First, you should recognize that it is common. And if you don't know that you have high blood pressure, You should probably check yourself and find out if by chance you possibly do. Regular checking of the blood pressure is necessary, especially I feel in those of us who are past the age of 40, it would be good if we had an occasional check of the blood pressure. If you are in a family where blood pressure has been a problem, then it's quite likely that you too are more susceptible to high blood pressure. I would invest in a blood pressure cuff. Take good care of it. Don't let it get banged around a lot or dropped. Doesn't matter about the stethoscope, but the cuff and the manometer on it, don't allow that to be scuffed around very much, because they can get so they don't read accurately if they are bumped about a great deal. Learn to take the blood pressure. It's easy to do. Anyone can learn how to do it. Any nurse will be happy to teach you, and many people who have taken blood pressures in vans and this kind of thing will also be very happy to teach you how to take blood pressure. 60 million Americans are involved in high blood pressure at the present time. Aspirin is likely to cause you to have an increase in blood pressure for several weeks after taking it. There are certain blood pressure medications that will cause damage to the human body. Certain blood pressure medications cause a loss of hearing. Some cause a loss of memory. And the memory deficits can be quite extensive before the individual actually realizes that there is any memory loss at all. There is an increased risk of getting diabetes with certain blood pressure medications. So if you have a high blood pressure, don't just say, well, I'll take care of that. I'll just take a medication and that'll be the end of my high blood pressure. If you have high blood pressure, find out the cause and eliminate the cause. Now, in 1982, a large study was published by the American Journal of Cardiology, showing that people who have high blood pressure, who take medications for it, are 60% more likely to die from some other cause than stroke during a 10-year follow-up period than they are to die of stroke and all other causes if they don't take high blood pressure medication. 60% more likely to die. So I say it is better to neglect blood pressure in many instances than it is to take the blood pressure medication. If you're taking blood pressure medication, reevaluate the whole thing. Learn to bring your blood pressure down through natural things. Now, what can you do? Number one is exercise. By the way, if you are taking blood pressure medication, don't just drop your medication, because sometimes that can cause a very high rebound phenomenon of the blood pressure. So you must taper off of blood pressure medications if you are taking it. Number one is exercise. It has been shown that just running in place, just running and getting a lot of arm exercise, running in place for 6 minutes every day, that will cause a reduction in blood pressure in almost anyone. Persons who are not physically fit are far more likely to have high blood pressure. The exercising that one must do should be regular, and it should be graduated. One should continue to exercise and not just exercise in maybe 1 month and the blood pressure comes down and then one stops. It should become a way of life with you if you have high blood pressure. It is a good tranquilizer if you are tense and nervous, and stress does play a part in high blood pressure. So if you have high blood pressure, take a walk every day or do some other kind of pleasant outdoor labor so that you can keep your blood pressure down. Just a relaxation exercise, as when you're sitting around in an afternoon lecture. Just tense the muscles and then relax them. Tense the muscles of the thighs and then relax them. Tense the muscles of the feet and hands and then relax them. You might even tense the muscles of the face and relax them. And doing so has been shown to bring the blood pressure down. In students in school, ages 12 to 14, who were in a group of students who had a high susceptibility to getting hypertension, these students were taught this little relaxation exercise and encouraged to do it throughout life. And after 10 years of checking them, it was discovered that they had less, they developed less hypertension than did those not taught the relaxation exercise. Now, the second thing is diet. What was the first thing? Exercise. And the second thing is diet. Okay, now the diet is important in several ways. Number one is that one must use no stimulatory foods. What are stimulating foods? Things like caffeinated beverages, but also things like vinegar. Anything that's made with vinegar, like ketchup, mustard, pickles, mayonnaise. Make your own mayonnaise, like that delightful mayonnaise that we had for lunch today. Some of you ate lunch with me. The ladies in the church had prepared several, had prepared two nice spreads for us. One was a soy mayonnaise, and that, I believe, was made without oil, wasn't it, sister? It was made very nicely without oil and was very good. We also had a delightful corn butter that I spread very generously on my good whole grain bread. It was very nice. I enjoyed that very much. But you can make mayonnaise without using vinegar by just making it sour with lemon juice. Put it in generously if you like mayonnaise nicely sour. Aged products or fermented products should not be taken. They are also stimulatory, and anything that will stimulate the nerves will also stimulate the blood pressure if you're susceptible to that. Cheeses contain an amino acid called tyrosine, which is broken down to tyramine, which causes the blood pressure to go up. It also causes people to have more spastic colon and more skin problems. So cheese, as Seventh-day Adventists have taught for over 100 years, is wholly unfit for the human stomach. Now, the second thing that diet is, that we must study when we study diet, is that of concentrated foods. Concentrated foods would include anything that has a high nutrient density for a small quantity of food. That would be all of the animal products. All animal products have a high nutrient density for a small quantity of food. Also, anything that contains free fat will usually be a high nutrient density food. We recommend to all people who have high blood pressure that they cut out free fats. Margarine, butter, mayonnaise, fried foods, cooking fats, and salad oils. All of those should be cut out by the individual who has high blood pressure. Also, arthritis is made worse, usually, by the use of free fats. Now, the third thing to prevent high blood pressure has to do with salt. If you want to prevent high blood pressure, don't take more than a half to one teaspoonful of salt per day in all that you eat. Now, in the South, we love salt. We generally tend to take 7 teaspoons of salt per person per day, when the American Heart Association recommends a half to 1 teaspoonful. Now, if you want to know how little that is, here is what to do. Follow Dr. Lewis Dahl's guidelines for reducing your salt intake to less than 1,000 milligrams per day, and then you can add a half teaspoonful to that. But now here is the guideline list that Dr. Lewis Dahl, very famous cardiologist, recommends to all Americans if they have high blood pressure. 1, never add salt to food, not in the factory, not at the stove, not at the table. 2, avoid milk and all dairy products. They are naturally high in salt. Milk glands are very close relatives of sweat glands. Sweat glands put out a lot of salt in their secretion, and mammary glands or milk glands put out a lot of salt in their secretions. One can't take any reasonable quantity of dairy products and still stay below 1,000 milligrams of salt per day. 3, use no processed foods, as they almost always contain food. Now, processed food means such things as bread and processed meats and TV dinners and canned foods. Most of them have salt in them, unless you buy them at a dietetics counter and it actually says on it, no salt added. Most crackers have no salt added, have a lot of salt added. You can get some with no salt. I believe that Triscuits may be available without salt. Some of the wassa breads can be purchased without salt. Once in a while, you can get some other kind of bread like Wheat Thins without salt. And some Sunshine products can be purchased without salt. And then there is the shredded wheat, which some people will be happy to use bite-sized or the biscuit size as bread when they're trying to get the blood pressure down without using salt. Even some frozen foods may have salt put in them. So you always have to read labels when you're trying to reduce your salt intake. The fourth thing is use no salted foods. Now that means just don't ever approach a vending machine of any kind for any reason. You can't get anything from a vending machine that isn't too high in salt. That would be nuts and popcorn, but that would also be any kind of sodas. Sodas are called sodas for a very good reason, because they have sodium in them, and that means, of course, that the person with high blood pressure is going to have a problem with that. Question?
What about frozen orange juice?
Question is about frozen orange juice. It should be free from salt. It shouldn't be a problem. Generally speaking, fruits do not have salt added to them.
But see, what I mean by some of the frozen oranges, most of them are saying made from concentrated. Does that mm-hmm. mean it has a certain amount of orange juice and is really good for your body?
Question is about frozen orange juice concentrate. That can be taken. It can be used all right. Juices are more concentrated than the fruit from which they are made, meaning that if you have diabetes or you have hypoglycemia, fruit juices are more likely to give you a problem. Question in the back.
Under processed foods, would that also include certain of the health foods that they don't...
Okay, the question is, would that include the health foods? And I'm afraid so. It would include all of them, pretty much. There might be a few that would not have salt added, but most of them do. By the way, the health foods are concentrated foods, and many people can't digest them very well. They're not essential for health. Many people feel that if they give up meat, then they simply must take the meat substitutes. And that isn't true. We do not require meat substitutes in order to be healthy. They are nice, and I'm glad that we have them, because when you give up meat, it is nice to have a substitute that is tasty until you get some recipes that don't require meat. And in my home, 18 years ago, by that time we had been vegetarians for maybe 4 years, ovo-lacto vegetarians at least, and we had a number of recipes by then that didn't require meat, vegetarian entrees. And so we gave up using meat substitutes a long time ago, probably about 18 or 20 years ago that we stopped using much in the way of meat substitutes. We may use a can of meat substitutes maybe once every other year or something like that. They're not a big item in our home. And one reason is that they're expensive. And of course, for the person who has high blood pressure, then salt would be a problem.
Yes, they're
salty, and also they're high in fat. Many of them, like the Franks, may have up to 60% fat in them. Question. Yes, celery has a high salt content, but we don't generally take enough celery for it to be a big problem for us. You could take a small amount of celery. But I have some other things that I object to too much celery for. One thing is sorrelin, which is present in celery, which makes it so that we shouldn't take in a lot of celery. Question?
That's soy milk.
Yes. Soy milk?
Soy milk.
Yes.
Can we use that?
Soy milk can be used. Now, soy milk does have some salt in it. You would have to use soy milk very sparingly. It does not have as much salt in it as dairy milk has. Question?
In my past experience, you know, working in construction for over 20-some-odd years, I have to take salt when I do a certain amount of moisture out of my body,
mm-hmm.
or else I start getting a
cramps.
Cramp.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, pretty bad, I almost cry.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to take salt to reduce it.
Yes. Okay. There are some people who sweat a lot of salt. They know who they are, and they should take extra salt when they're doing a lot of sweating. There are certain families who sweat more salt than others. Over in Switzerland, where they have the Swiss clockworks, there are some families that they won't let them work back in the place where they, because they're called rusters. When they deal with the clocks and the watches, just the sweat on the hands has more salt than other people's. And so there are certain families in some towns where they have the watchworks that these people can work in the office and they can work in sales, but they can't work back there in the factory where they make the clockworks. Question is about sea salt. For those who are not hypertensive, sea salt is probably all right. I don't know that it has any particular advantage over just ordinary salt, and with so much pollution in the sea now, I have felt that it might not be a good idea to recommend it too heartily, because it might be better to have the more purified variety. Whatever we use in the way of salt should be used very sparingly. One time I decided that I would go on Dr. Lewis Dahl's guidelines to see what kind of inconvenience it is to my patients when I tell them to be without salt. And I found it not a problem at all after about the first week or so. At first I was handicapped in enjoying my food because it didn't have salt in it. And then I got to the place where I really preferred many things without salt. Popcorn. Let me tell you my experience with popcorn. When I was a young child, every Saturday night, when the fire would burn down low on a cold winter night, my father would take a popcorn popper, one of these kinds that was in a little square basket that had a little screen wire top on it with a long handle that had a little trigger on it to open the top, open the little screen wire part. Then he would pull the little trigger, open the screen wire part. My mother would pour in some popcorn. Then he would hold it over the embers and shake it like this and make the popcorn like that. And it would pop and pop and pop. And oh, it was so nice to hear it popping. Then my father would pull the little trigger and the little lid would fly up. And then he would pass that around to us. And I was the youngest in the family, so he would always pass it to me first. And he would say, "Now, honey, when you put your hand in, don't get burned. Just take a few grains out and don't get burned." And he would pass it to my brother, then to my mother, then he would take some. And we would pour the rest in a bowl, and then he would start popping some more. And I ate popcorn just like that all of my life until I was 17 years old, first time I ever had buttered, salted popcorn. Oh, it was the greatest thing that I had ever tasted. I'd never tasted anything so irresistible as buttered, salted popcorn. That's the way it often is with things that have unhelpful things put on them, that they are irresistible. You simply cannot stop eating them. And that's not the way that the Lord intended. I would never have known what I had missed if I had not had buttered, salted popcorn. So we went back to using plain popcorn. And now I've gotten so that it never crosses my mind to have it salted and buttered. I love just plain popcorn. You will too if you get accustomed to it. It isn't bad. It isn't irresistible, but it's certainly a good food. Now, the next thing having to do with a blood pressure problem is that of fasting. A day or two of fasting will do most people more good than any amount of medical advice or treatment. So we recommend fasting. Apples have been found by Dr. Levine to have a substance in them that brings the blood pressure down. So we always recommend that people with high blood pressure always take an apple fast. Question?
My husband has high blood pressure. And he fasted one day,
but he's
normal, but then he goes back to
eating. Yes. Yes. Okay. The thing is that... When one fasts and the blood pressure comes down, this simply indicates that things like salt and fat that are present in the food are part of the culprit making the blood pressure go up. It would be wise for you to investigate those things and bring your blood pressure down by normal means. Now, I'd like to tell you a story. My pastor, when I worked in one of the pastors who worked with us in the Field School of Evangelism in Birmingham, Alabama, had a mother who was very sick. So Pastor Blythe wanted me to see his mother, see if there were anything that I could do for her. She was a Mormon and had some understanding of health message, but did not have the fullness of the health message that he had come to understand, and he wanted her to become a Seventh-day Adventist. He wanted her to practice our health message. He thought she would be healthier and happier, and she was going to come and live with him, and so he wanted me to see her. She was on three very powerful medications for her blood pressure. She had been on medication for her blood pressure for 18 years. When she came to see me, she's 2 years younger than I am. She was about 52 at that time, about 2 years ago. And at that time, when she came in to see me, she was just reeling because of the medications that she was on. Her balance was all upset, and she looked just really quite terrible. Looked as if she might be nearing death. Her face looked bloated. She was glassy-eyed. She had very little interest in things. She came in and lumbered in and plopped down in the chair. I took her blood pressure, and her blood pressure was 240 over 140. And I said, "Ms. Bly, you are not in good condition, and I think that you should go directly to Yuchi Pines and let us treat you for your blood pressure." She said, "Oh, I couldn't go. I'll have to stay here." She didn't seem too interested in about taking any measures for her health. And as bad as she looked like she felt, I could see that she didn't care too much whether she lived or died. But I told her to go on a fast for 3 days. The second day of the fast, she could eat apples, but nothing but apples. And the third day of the fast, nothing but apples. Apples for breakfast, apples for lunch, and apples for supper. On the fourth day, we were taking her blood pressure every day, by the way. On the fourth day, after she had finished with the fast, her blood pressure was down to about 190 over 105. And when she came in to see me, she said, "Dr. Thrash, nobody ever told me how to get my blood pressure down. Nobody ever told me how." She must have said that 10 times. She was astounded that she could get her blood pressure down immediately by just simple things like going on a fast and drinking plenty of water. I had her to take a little exercise. She could walk very slowly in the cool of the day, 1 block from her home and back, 1 block. The next day, if she felt like it and hadn't had any ill effect the day before, she could take 2 blocks from and back. And the next day, if she had no ill effects, she could walk 4 blocks. and back. I was very concerned about her health. When she had been 1 week on the diet, she was feeling so well that the hostess, the lady that I lived with, invited her to come and spend a whole week with us and eat our diet and walk with us. Of course, every morning we got out and took a real brisk walk right up the side of the mountain. She walked with us, but she would walk as far as going down the hill. Then she would tell us, well, you go ahead and I'll putter along here. And she would very carefully walk up the hill. Within a matter of 3 months, she had lost about 35 pounds. She needed to lose about another 35 pounds. And her blood pressure was entirely normal. It was about 112 over 72. And she has had the same thing. I checked on her about 2 weeks ago. She has still kept her weight down. She is a total vegetarian now. And her blood pressure is just as nice and normal as it was then. I could tell you 20 stories just like that of people whose blood pressure was shooting out the top who had a very good result from the simplest of things. Now, one last thing about blood pressure, and that has to do with dress. If a person has high blood pressure or any kind of heart disease, they should not wear they should always wear something on the arms. They should not be bare-armed nor bare-legged because of the fact that if the skin becomes chilled, then the blood that should be out in the skin and muscles and tissues, warming those tissues, will be congesting the interior of the body, which makes the blood pressure go up. It congests the heart and the lungs and makes it so that a person isn't so likely to have good heart action. Now, I'd like to show you some things about the heart, and then Brother Kobor is going to talk with you about some things of the heart also. A nap after a meal is a very pleasant thing. Everybody likes it. And it's good for you, or is it? Is it good for you to take a nap after a meal? Never. I'm glad you know that. Let's just notice this. This is a quote. A peaceful after-dinner nap may be only the lull before the cardiac storm, as scientists find that physical inactivity can lead to the accumulation of chyle in the thoracic duct, and any sudden movement can propel enough chyle into the blood to produce a coronary embolism of chyle. Now, notice what it is in this diagram. Here you will see the lymphatic system of a person. See the lymphatics here all through the body. Here are the lymph nodes. And here is the cisterna chyli, right here, this little dark line. In this place, the chyle or the lymph from many tissues from the intestinal tract all come together and bring the fatty substances from our meal, 60% of it, of the free fats like butter and margarine, mayonnaise, fried foods and so forth, 60% of that fat and peanut butter will be taken up by the lymphatics rather than going directly into the bloodstream. And consequently, this fat, when we lie down after a meal, if we have a sudden activity of any kind, such as turning over in bed during the nap, this can press the chyle up into the blood vessel into the chest where the lymph fluid re-enters the blood circulation and cause a coronary embolism, which can cause the individual to have a heart attack. A very favored time for a person to have a heart attack is during the night after a heavy, fatty meal. Remember a story very well of a relative of mine who went to have supper at his son's house one night. And his son's wife was a very excellent cook in the Southern style. And that night they had fried chicken, and the man ate generously of the fried chicken. They had a large salad onto which he spooned very generously Roquefort dressing, which is high in fat. He drank 2 glasses of iced tea and had a large dessert topped off with ice cream during the night. He began to have a coronary occlusion. By 4 o'clock the next morning, he woke up with chest pain. And by noon the next day, he was dead with his heart attack. He had gone to bed right after eating that heavy, fatty meal. By the way, he had rolls very heavily lathered with margarine, and went to bed right after that fatty meal with fried foods and dressings, fatty dressings and fat spreads, and that made the difference between life and death for that man. Now here is the Framingham study. Notice this, that if a person has a cholesterol of 200 as compared to 270, which is at 200, all of these studies, we will give the value of 1 to their heart attack risk. At 270, the heart attack risk in the Framingham study was 3.25. In the Albany study, at 270 as compared to 200, it was 3.75. And in the Minneapolis study, it was 5.5. In the People's Gas study, it was 4.1. In the Western Electric study, it was 4.3. So we can see that just modest elevations in the blood cholesterol mean a great deal of difference in the way that a person reacts with a heart attack. And at this time, Brother Kobor is going to tell you some more about the heart and maybe even show you a specimen.
By the way, I would like to say that after our meeting, the Sabbath closes, I will be doing some pre-blood pressure checks. So if you would like to have your blood pressure checked, you're welcome to come to our table. What is the number one killer in America? Heart disease, right? It is all right for you to have a big heart socially, but not physically. Normal heart should be about your fist, around about at this position. I'm going to pass this specimen around. We'll talk about this. You can handle it from one to another. This heart, as you see, is cast in fat, which adds substantially to the amount of room which takes up in the chest. Also, the muscles of this heart is greatly enlarged because of the high blood pressure. The size of the heart caused the chest to compress it. This tends to make the blood flow in the vessel of the heart less capable of carrying blood. In addition to that, there is a greater likelihood getting atherosclerosis. Now, the owner of this heart was a 51-year-old man. He was greatly overweight, an executive of a bank. He had much to live for beside eating fatty foods, rich foods. One cold morning in January, he backed his car out from his garage, drove it out to the street, and then he went back to close his garage door and also his gate. It was a windy morning, and the wind hit him on his chest. But 45 minutes later, just as he was finishing his second cup of coffee, he felt his first chest pain. An hour later, this pain became severe. He was taken to the nearest emergency room, where he was pronounced dead on his arrival. At autopsy, his heart was looking like this. And at this time, I would like to show you some transparencies about the heart. As you would see on this one, a clot over here, and then the dead tissues, because there is no blood float. And this next one, you would see up here a normal vessel. Then this second one is starting to plugging by cholesterol. And for instance, in the Korean War, they have done some autopsies on soldiers, and they find that even young soldiers, at age of 19, they already had cholesterol in their blood vessels. And what do you think? What was that due to? Diet, fast foods, and also all of them were smoking. All of those who had cholesterol. And eventually it builds up to this last one. Now, let's see the 3B. What is the first one? Can you see it all right? Maybe I should raise it high. All right, can you see it now? So the first one looked like what?
An egg.
Yeah, cholesterol. Egg yolk is very high in cholesterol. So you definitely want to watch out for that. And what is the second one? Cigarettes. And the third one? What is it? No, that's not weight. There is a scale, but it's not weight. You just had a lecture on it. It's high blood pressure. The 3B. Okay. Now, foods are high in cholesterol. As you see, brain, egg yolk, and so on. Now let's see, what are the medium in cholesterol. What kind of foods are those?
Notice that cheese is higher than lard.
Cheese on the number one list of the medium. Now let's see what are foods which are low in cholesterol. What do you find at the zeros? So you can see what kind of diet was given in the Garden of Eden. Our wise creator, he knew what he was doing, right? Now I would like to share a few things from this book, which I highly would recommend to each one of you. It would be well worth your money and your time. And there are a few things here on coronary risk on page 19. Like what we were just talking about, elevated cholesterol, smoking, and high blood pressure. All three gives 30% chance of sudden death. 30% chance of sudden death. All these big threes. Then other coronary risks, obesity, inadequate exercise, low vital capacity, the volume of air exhaled after a full inspiration, high sugar intake, pause over 80, stressful lifestyle, hereditary predisposition, alcohol use, coffee, even decaffeinated coffee. Now, dietary cause of high blood cholesterol. Ideal level, probably around 100. For instance, about a year ago, my cholesterol was taken, my blood was checked, and the cholesterol came back in the abnormal section. And the reason why they put it over there, because I wasn't meeting up with the average American. My cholesterol was 104. And over here, it recommended that, or it should be around 100 and your age. So you can see after being a pure vegetarian for 4 years, how my cholesterol came down. And I'm pretty sure when I was used to eating bacon and all the other things, that my cholesterol wasn't that low.
Actually, the lower the cholesterol is, the better it is.
True.
It was put in the abnormal range because it was out of the average range, not the ideal.
Yes. Okay, so dietary cause of high blood pressure, high blood cholesterol, present of meat, milk, eggs, cheese, high fat content, sugar, refined foods, salt, too much vitamin C, coffee, tea, colas, chocolate, and alcohol. Now, lack of vitamin C, fiber, especially whole grains, or fruits, vegetables, especially legumes, could cause that coronary risk. Now, general factors are smoking, poor posture, low posture again, low vital capacity, lack of exercise, blood pressure elevation, tension, noise, TV, and overweight. So there are quite a few things what we can do about not falling into these heart risks, coronary heart risk. And I do believe that we have a responsibility toward this temple which was given to us to put it into the best shape possible. The Lord wants us to be a peculiar people. He wants us to, like it says in Deuteronomy 14:21, that we cannot have it, but we may sell it to the aliens, or we may give it to the strangers. But we personally, we can't have it because God wants us to be holy people. And may the Lord help each one of us to prepare for that time, that event, when our Savior can take us over.
You have been listening to another special American Cassette Ministries presentation. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International Copyright American Cassette Ministries, all rights reserved. To order CDs or audio cassettes of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 1-800-233-4450. International calls, please dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americancassette.org. There you will discover the largest selection of genuine Adventist preaching available. American Cassette Ministries is not a one-man band. It's an orchestra of outstanding speakers who are all on the same theological page. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Cassette Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony. Our email address is info@americancassette.org. We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and financial support are important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. Peace, coming soon.